What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Rico Brown, y'all, let the chant begin. Rico Brown, y'all, let's hear it again. Rico Brown, y'all, this show's on fire. With Evan Roberts, we're taking it higher. Rico Brown, y'all, Rico Brown, y'all, yeah. Rico Brown, y'all, let's go. Rico Brown, y'all, let's run the show.
Rico Brown, a victorious Rico Brown, as the New York Mets win a series for the first time in what feels like forever. The Mets win back-to-back games in what feels like for the first time in forever. I'm not going to declare them back. I'm not going to say there's nothing to worry about. I'm not going to say the division race is back on. Here's what I will say as we open this very happy edition of Rico Brown, episode 532. It's about goddamn time. It is about time the Mets, over the course of 48 hours, put together two complete games in which, yes, they hit, but oops, the starting pitching screwed up, or oops, the starting pitching's actually decent, but the offense doesn't show up, or wait, everything works except for the bullpen. Luckily, after Friday night's debacle, and Friday night was a massive debacle, this team finally was able to respond. And let's be perfectly honest, the thing that really helped turn this around was Nolan McClain. And we'll get to the Rico, I'm the Man Now star of the series a little bit later on. He is without question a candidate because the infusion of youth, having a young starting pitcher come up, live up to the hype at least in one game, look kind of like the part of what we were thinking about, and deliver them scoreless baseball. I mean, when was the last time, and I actually looked it up because it was crazy to me, when was the last time, besides using an opener, where you can get one scoreless inning, when was the last time the Mets got a starting pitcher to make a reasonably lengthy start in this day and age, 5 1/3 innings qualifies, and not give up a run? When was the last time that happened? So great work by Nolan McClain on Saturday. We'll break down all three games, the collapse from Friday, the victory on Saturday, the victory on Sunday. But you know, first of all, just an overarching view of this team. They have actually been hitting for a while, and I don't think we've given it enough credit because they've been losing anyway, and because their starting pitching was so bad for a consistent period of time. But their clutch hitting has been good for a couple of weeks now. And remember, they've had a lot of games over the course of this run where they lose 11-9, they lose 11-6, they lose 7-6, they lose 7-6, they lose 12-6. You know what I mean? Like, they've scored runs. The offense has come out of it over the last couple of weeks. It's just been really about putting together complete performances. And over the last 2 days against the Mariners, a good team, they were able to do so. I start with Nolan McClain. The second guy I have to mention, overarching view of these three games, is Francisco Lindor. And I'm not entirely surprised about it. I said it on the last Rico towards the end. We actually had our little pick segment that we now have. And my pick was Lindor having an anytime home run on Friday night. And he did in the first at bat. I'm not saying this to brag. I'm saying this because you could see over the course of the Atlanta series that he was starting to get hot. And here's the thing that's frustrating. When you're losing, and the Mets have been losing a lot, it's very difficult, even here on the Rico Brown, to say a positive with a straight face. Because your view, even when saying the positive, is, who cares? They suck. They're losing every single night. But the reality is it's a long season, and those small little positives could lead to something. And in the case of Francisco Lindor, it led to something because he was starting to heat up in the Atlanta series. It absolutely continued over these three games against the Mariners. And right now we're dealing with a red-hot Francisco Lindor. And as we've said many times, this is a team that goes when Lindor goes, and for a considerable amount of time during the funk they've been in since the middle of June, he hasn't hit. He's been a big part of it. And early on when they were struggling, the June 13th date is the date that everybody likes to use. And it's real because they started struggling on that date. You saw Lindor do very little. You saw Alonso do very little. Both of those guys have woken up. Both of those guys have gotten hot. So I look at this offense right now, and there's a few things we do need to figure out. We'll talk about as the episode goes on, specifically Vientos playing time, Beatty playing time. Acuna was up here for a day. Should he stick around? We'll get into that later. But this team is starting to hit. What they desperately needed was a starting pitcher to actually twirl them five innings. And over these three games, they got it 3 days in a row. And if you go back to the end of the Atlanta series, you're talking about four consecutive games this team has played in which their starting pitcher has gone five innings. And I know that doesn't sound amazing, especially if you're an old school baseball fan, but we have to accept in 2025 that going five innings is basically the new quality start. And the Mets were able to get that 4 days in a row. And what it does is it eases the burden just a little bit from this bullpen. Now, I want to go back to Friday. I want to start from the beginning here because Friday night, and it's amazing because the Mets have had so many bad losses over the course of the last few weeks and really over the course of the season. But Friday was just another example of a gut punch kind of loss. And it was a weird game. Like, they're down 1-0 immediately. They come back and tie it when Lindor hits the home run. They go down 2-1. Then they go up 3-2. Then they go down 4-3. Then they come back. And once they built the 6-4 lead, Sean Manaea settled in. Now, I'm not going to give, you know, a five-inning, four-run performance like an A outing for Sean Manaea, but I do give him credit that after being so hittable over the first three innings, allowing all four of those runs, it was very nice to see. He got a lot of swing and misses in the fourth and fifth inning. I think it was mostly on a sweeper, but we saw a much better version of Sean Manaea in those two innings. And you give him a 6-4 lead, he protects the 6-4 lead for two innings. I thought that there was kind of an avenue for Mendy to keep him in the game. His pitch count was 88, so it wasn't incredibly low, but it also wasn't incredibly high. And like I say a lot, the pitch count shouldn't be something we're a slave to negatively or positively. If a guy's throwing the ball well at 88 pitches, you can squeeze another inning out of him. And vice versa, even when your pitch count is low, as I said a lot with Clay Holmes, you get him out of the game. But it felt like Manaea was really starting to click in the fourth and fifth inning of this game. And considering what had happened the day before against Atlanta, where Ryan Helsley blew the game and Tyler Rogers didn't help out, going back to the Rogers-Helsley formula, which you were inevitably going to need to do, but you didn't need to do it that early. So first guest number one, ladies and gentlemen, on the great Carlos Mendoza was on Friday night. Can you squeeze another inning out of Sean Manaea? Is that a possibility? Can you do that with a pitch count that's still in the mid to high 80s, especially considering how well he looked or how well he was pitching in the fourth or fifth inning? That's problem number one, Carlos. Now, problem number two is your bullpen, our bullpen, the team we root for's bullpen, is supposed to be a strength. And, you know, I say this with a smile on my face only because when you acquire a reliever, they're a lottery ticket. Now, you would think that guys like Ryan Helsley and Tyler Rogers, based on their resumes, are less a risky lottery ticket than others. And that is true. You know, it's like the scratch-off. Like, there are certain ones where the odds of you winning are very, very low. And then there's other tickets where the odds of you winning are halfway decent. Ryan Helsley's track record says that he wasn't a high-risk acquisition. Same with Tyler Rogers. Gregory Soto, in my opinion, was a higher risk acquisition. Meanwhile, here we are, how many weeks after the trade deadline, and if you're power ranking those three guys, the three acquisitions that David Stearns made, Helsley, Rogers, and Soto, are we not all putting Gregory Soto either one or two? Tyler Rogers isn't really a problem right now, but he hasn't been unhittable, obviously, and he contributed to Friday's loss. He gave up a couple of base hits. He gave one of the runs back. And I like to say with Rogers, most of the hits he gives up are not hard hit balls. the hit he gave up that drove in the run to make it 6-5 was 103 miles per hour off the bat. So I can't make that excuse for him. The positive was he got through the inning. But now you set up Ryan Helsley in the seventh inning of a one-run game, and there's a fine line between, hey, I'm going to keep running this guy out there, thinking the results will change, versus, hey, maybe I should put him in a little bit lesser of a leverage spot. And I guess in Mendy's case here, because he only got five out of Manaea, which goes back to issue number one, why'd you take him out after five innings? You really don't have that many options. You're kind of stuck where Helsley's going to enter this game. And I'm kind of managing along here thinking, all right, he's doing everything in inning early. He's going to Rogers in the sixth. He's going to Helsley in the seventh inning. What is the plan for the eighth inning? What is the plan for the ninth inning? Is he going to go to Edwin Diaz and be very aggressive on Friday night? Now, Ryan Helsley made this easy for us because he took a giant low, took a giant crap all over the mound. I know that came out very oddly. It came out odd to begin with. I guess that's a phrase I use a lot when a pitcher sucks. I crapped on the mound, which is basically what happened. But he comes in, and if you were half expecting that maybe this would be his turnaround outing, maybe this would be his bounce back, I mean, he blew that thing in 35 seconds. It took no time for Ryan Helsley to get booed off the mound. And I do go back to questioning Manaea or Mendy for taking Manaea out as early as he did, because he put himself in another spot where he's trusting Ryan Helsley in the seventh inning. And it obviously went bad. I can't kill Brooks Raley, because Raley comes in. I thought at that point Mendy did it right in terms of when he took Helsley out. He basically took him out as soon as he could. Goes to Brooks Raley. And this was the first time we saw a failure by Raley. And he was kind of due to have a dud like that. So I can't kill him for the implosion. But you know, I'm sitting there. I'm actually driving as I'm consuming this game, driving out of North Carolina. And I'm shaking my head like, you got to be freaking kidding me. This happened again? And it just got worse. Like, he goes to Frankie Montas. Fine. He's got to eat up some innings. And Montas gives up a couple of runs. And all of a sudden, a game that felt very winnable, the second straight game in which they had a game won with the bullpen on the mound. In this case, they needed 12 outs. You go back to the Atlanta game the night before, very similar situation. The second straight game where the strength of this team completely blows it. And of course, we get the tease, the full rally. The Francisco Alvarez three-run home run, which I am not complaining about. It's great to see Morin Alvarez later with the thumb issue. But he hits the opposite field three-run home run. They pull within 11-9, but no one in their freaking right mind thought they were coming back. Mariners have one of the top closers in baseball, Andrés Muñoz. They did not touch him in the ninth inning. I did receive, and I was checking this out yesterday, a lot of emails from people complaining about Mendy going back to Montas in the ninth inning once they made it 11-9. I'll tell you why I didn't have an issue with it. Not because I'm giving up on the game. I mean, obviously, it was always going to be tough to complete that comeback against Munoz, like I mentioned. But it's more, bro, what are you going to do on Saturday in a winnable close game, which it turned out to be, if you're using another high-leverage arm chasing a game that you're likely not going to win? And some look at that as punting a game. It's not punting a game. It's not managing idiotically. That's what it is. I mean, trust me, I didn't love Frankie Montas going out for the ninth inning because I didn't trust him, not because it was a bad move. Again, you have a game the next day, and look what ended up happening. It was a close, low-scoring game, and you were going to have to maximize your bullpen and your top-level guys. So I didn't have an issue with Mendy going back to Montas. The problem was, I mean, we're asking an offense to go out and score 12 runs. We're asking the offense to come out and score, you know, 12, 13 runs to win a baseball game. So valiant effort by the Mets, at least offensively, trying to come back in this game. And credit to the offense. Like, I know my critique of them usually is they score early and then they go away. In this game, they responded almost every time Seattle scored. And eventually, once we had the Helsley-Raley implosion of the seventh inning, it was just, I mean, what do we expect? know, at some point it becomes unreasonable to expect them to come back. So Friday sucked on every level because it was another one of those games where you just say, how are they going to win when they're set up for a victory and it's the strength of the team on the mound? And now you're questioning everything about Ryan Helsley. Like, can you even pitch him again after that crap job on Friday? It just makes you wonder, like, are they going to win again? So that's what really made winning the close game on Saturday and Nolan McLain's performance so freaking important, because you lose on Friday the way you do. You lose on Thursday the way you do when you waste the good outing by Kodai Senga, when you waste a late lead. This team on Saturday was so desperate for something good to happen. That's the way I viewed this game. They just needed something good. And when Nolan McLain is on the mound, look, what can you expect? It's the kid's major league debut, and you don't want to get too nuts one way or the other. If he's great, it doesn't mean he's going to the Hall of Fame. If he sucks, it doesn't mean he's Anthony Young 2.0. Like, but in the case of where we are in the schedule and where they are in this season, they needed something good. That's how I viewed Saturday's game. And credit to Nolan McLain, man. You could tell from the first batter, when he struck out Randy Arozarena looking, and then the way he battled through the first inning after he walked Cal Raleigh, in which he knew, I'm not going to let Raleigh beat me. That was basically McLain's attitude, which is probably the right attitude to have, considering Cal Raleigh was impossible to get out this entire weekend. But he got through the first inning. He had a 1-2-3 second inning. And then what he did in the third inning, these are all the notes we're taking in our head about this kid. You know, major league debut, first chance we're seeing him, pressurized spot, because it's not like the Met offense exploded early. They did nothing in the first inning, wasted a 2-1-1-out rally when Alonso struck out and Jeff McNeil lined out. They didn't do anything in the second inning. So it's 0-0 in the third. You're facing a tough customer in Brian Wu. Who knows if you're getting any runs? And Nolan McLain runs into his first crisis of his major league career. And this is the thing you marvel at. This was, I'm going to use a term, don't hold me to this is what McLain's going to be. I'm just using a term to describe the balls he showed in his first start. What he did in the third inning was DeGrom-like. Because the thing about Jake, we remember the dominance, right? The strikeouts, the sexy numbers, the low whip. No. The real Met fan knows that what made Jake great early were the stones, was the balls. You know, there was a start Jake made against the Phillies coming off the injured list, or I don't know if it was coming off the injured list or just coming off of missing time, which unfortunately would happen. And in the first inning, he threw 45 pitches to get through a first inning and didn't give up a run. And it was incredible. It was incredible stones. We all remember game 5 against the Dodgers. It was stones. It was not just a guy who has electric stuff, who dominates, who has a pitch you can't hit. It's the ability to wiggle yourself out of the toughest of jams and the toughest of situations. So when Nolan McLain issues a 9-pitch walk to J.P. Crawford in the third inning, worrisome. When he then walks Cole Young right after him, so you got back-to-back walks, and there's 2-1 and nobody out, and the top of the order is coming up. This is a crisis moment. I mean, this game could turn. And again, this is unfair pressure for a rookie pitcher that he needs to save us. And I said, boy, they needed something good after the way they lost on Friday. It's unfair pressure to say this for him. But we're, as fans, kind of consuming it, saying, hey, can you save us? Fair or not? And here are the two things that were so incredible. He strikes out Arozarena. Okay, deep breath. Gets that first out. 2-1, nobody out, gets that first out. He gives up the base hit to Cal Raleigh after he gets ahead of him 1-2, which is disappointing. You know you're going after him with first and second, one out. You really don't have a spot to pitch around him. You're ahead 1-2, and Raleigh, who's just having this all-world season, MVP caliber season, rips a base hit to right field. So it's bases loaded, it's one out, it's a 0-0 game, it's the third inning of this kid's major league career, and he's facing the great Julio Rodriguez. and he gets him to bounce one up the middle that is, I mean, going into center field for a two-run single, and he pulls off this incredible behind-the-back play, and that's amazing part number one, that he was able to make that play, the behind-the-back play on the comebacker, but the poise, just the calmness. Okay, I'm going to throw to second base. Beatty makes the return to first. Double play inning over. I mean, that was so impressive. Not just the great defensive play, but the calmness, the stones that I talk about, to know exactly what to do with the baseball. Because with bases loaded, one out, maybe in your brain as a pitcher, you're thinking, hey, I get a comeback, I'm going home, one, two, three, double play. Even if I don't turn it, I get the lead out. But the way he spun around, his best chance was going to second base. He did not hesitate. He made a perfect throw. I mean, how many times have we seen pitchers make crap throws to second base on comebackers? So you get the stones of Nolan McLean in the third inning. That was the inning. That was the inning that gets me pumped up about watching this kid for the rest of the season. And not just the rest of the season, the rest of his career. I mean, one thing you may know about me or may not know about me is, man, I'm a sucker for starting pitching. The Mets have not had that in the last couple of years, but in 2015, we were spoiled. There's a reason why the 2015 Mets is my favorite team I ever rooted for. Above 99, above 2000, above 06. The reason is because it was all this homegrown stud starting pitching. Matt Harvey, Jacob DeGrom, Noah Syndergaard, Steven Matt. It was beautiful. And we have a long way to go, obviously. This is the first of three big-time prospects who are going to get the call at some point, but this is Nolan McLean. This is his debut. And this is my hope and your hope that years from now, we're going to view McLean, Tong, and Sproat as the guys I just talked about. And I'll never forget DeGrom's debut. He did it against the Yankees. He did it in the Subway Series. He did it in a loss, but that was because the offense did nothing for him. But we remember it, and we remember how, hey, boy, that's a tough way to make your major league debut. The Subway Series, that's not easy. And I think it kind of goes here with Nolan McLean. Your team has been losing every single day. You're about to drop out of a playoff spot. This is the way you're going to make your major league debut, and he did. And he responds to that third inning with a 1-2-3 fourth. He gets out of trouble in the fifth. Now we get to the sixth inning. Obviously, the Mets were able to at least get a run in on the RBI double by Francisco Lindor, who we talked about. Great weekend by Lindor. But he only has this 1-0 lead in the sixth inning. His pitch count is 81-5.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
McLean hasn't thrown triple digits yet this year. If you look at how many pitches he normally throws in the minor leagues, you're looking at high 80s, low 90s. So based on the fact that he hasn't thrown 100 pitches in any game this year, and I'll double check if that's true, but I was looking at it before the game. It was mostly high 80s, low 90s in terms of how many pitches he threw in a game. You kind of knew beginning the sixth inning, heart of the batting order, Mendy's going to go batter to batter. He's not going to really give him that chance to get through the sixth inning. Would I have loved to have seen it? Of course. But he walks Cal Raleigh to start the sixth inning. And I was actually surprised that Mendy didn't make the move right then and there and say, you know what, kid? I gave you a chance to start the sixth inning. You're at 81 pitches. You walked a very good hitter in Cal Raleigh. But remember, he's the tying run. It's a 1-0 game. It's not like you've got this margin for error. But he allowed him. And I thought this was great to face Rodriguez. And maybe it's because he got Julio the first two times up. I'm not sure. Maybe it's the righty-righty matchup. Whatever it is, he strikes out Julio Rodriguez, and then he comes to the mound, which is the ultimate tease to fans, because fans are thinking, well, he just struck out J-Rod. Why would you take him out of the game? You're not going to take him out of the game. Why would you take him out of the game? So he comes out. The crowd is booing. I get it. I'm not going to kill this move. I understand it. He's had 91 pitches. Could you give him one more hitter, especially since he had handled Josh Naylor? Sure. But I think he's also thinking, I'm going to Gregory Soto. I'm going to get the lefty-lefty. I don't know if you guys felt this way. Off the bat, I thought Naylor hit a two-run home run. Off the bat. I thought he hit it so well off Soto. And then I see the other Soto, Juan Soto, kind of getting under it in right field. And I'm like, my God, I was very fooled off the bat. I thought Soto gave up a two-run home run. And then Gregory went to work, man. He struck out Suarez. He pitched a 1-2-3 seventh inning. I mentioned this earlier. You talk about the relievers they acquired and who you trust. Gregory Soto has been unbelievable. I hope it continues, but he's made 8 appearances. It's 8 1/3 innings, 0 earned runs. I think the only run he gave up was the extra inning game, if memory serves correct, when he came in and allowed the Manfred man to score. But outside of that, Gregory Soto has been, he's been flawless. And he is now, I think it's official, he's in the circle of trust. How could he not be? And in a lot of ways, when we name our Rico, I'm the Man Now star of the series, honorable mention of Gregory Soto. Because 1-0 lead, runner on, sixth inning, you're facing some of the Mariners' better hitters, and he retires all 5 guys. Great work by Gregory Soto. We see the offense tack on a couple of runs in the seventh inning. Thank God, because I don't think there's anybody who thought they were going to win a 1-0 game. I didn't think they were winning 1-0. Did anybody think they were going to win 1-0? There was no way they were going to win that game 1-0. So Lindor again starts a rally or continues a rally with a base hit and a stolen base. Soto comes up behind in the count, gets the job done with a sac fly. Alonso comes through with an RBI double. So you see a little bit of clutch hitting to get that 3-0 lead. And then you have the Edwin Diaz decision. I have been screaming and yelling for a very long time that you should use your best reliever, not always in the ninth inning. Sometimes it's the eighth inning where you should use your best reliever. And maybe it's a 6-out save, maybe it's not. Maybe you're just using your best reliever to get 3 outs in the eighth inning. He protects the lead, and you figure out the ninth inning a different way. Maybe you flip-flop whoever you would have pitched in the eighth inning for the ninth inning. So in the case of Saturday, because of Helsley pitching the night before and being awful, because of Rogers pitching how many games in a row, my view was it's Reed Garrett and it's Edwin Diaz to get these last 6 outs. The Mariners had 9-1-2 of the order coming up. Mets had just scored 2 runs to make it 3-0, but keep this in mind because this is the way I'm thinking about things. If there was no 3-batter minimum, if that did not exist, it does, but if it didn't exist, I'd be okay with a 3-0 lead in the eighth inning and 9-1-2 coming up to go batter to batter with someone not named Edwin Diaz. In this case, Reed Garrett. I would understand it because if he puts the leadoff man on, I could just pull him. If he puts 2 guys on, I could just pull him. Because of the 3-batter minimum, you can't do that. So I like to think of it this way. What is the worst possible scenario that could hit me without using my best reliever? Well, if there's a 3-batter minimum and you're up 3-0, the worst possible scenario is it's 3-3. Whoever you use, in this case, Reed Garrett, he puts a guy on, another guy on, gives up a 3-run home run. That's the soonest you could take him out. So because of that, I'm going Edwin Diaz. I'm not effing around. That's just me. And that's exactly what this manager did. He goes to Diaz in the eighth. He pitches not a 1-2-3 inning, but a clean inning, gets the first 2 guys out, gets a base hit, strikes out Julio Rodriguez. Then he brings him back for the ninth inning. But I thought this was really interesting on Mendoza's part. So Diaz ends up getting the 6-out save, as we all know. And I think that a lot of people viewed this as, boy, he really wanted the victory. He needed the victory. He called upon Diaz to do something that they never asked him to do, which is a 6-out save. And I thought maybe that's what Carlos was thinking, not what I'm thinking, which is let me use my best reliever in the eighth inning. And then based on a lot of different factors, I could decide numerous things. I could take Diaz out after the scoreless inning and go to Reed Garrett. My offense could explode, and then I could use a low-leverage guy for the ninth inning. Or if Diaz is efficient enough, I could bring him back for the ninth inning. So I was very curious what Carlos would say about this. Is he on the Evan side, the Rico Bronya side, or was he just, nah, I'm Joe Torre, 1999. I'm asking Mo for a six-out save. I don't know if you have it, Hoff, but here is the audio of Carlos Mendoza explaining his thinking on going to Edwin Diaz in the eighth inning.
I wasn't thinking two innings out of the gate, you know. I was thinking more like their best hitters are coming up. This may be the safe situation. I'll figure out the nine. But once he was pitch efficient there, I was comfortable sending him back out.
What this proves is Carlos Mendoza does listen to the Rico Bronya. That's what it proves, because I haven't seen Mendy do this at all this season, okay? Maybe one time I'm forgetting. I did see Buck do it a few times. I think Carlos was probably on the bus, and he's like, you know, let me listen to that schmuck. Let me see what that redhead's got to say. I'll never admit if I'm going to listen to him, like leading off Juan Soto or batting Pete Alonso second. But you know what? He's kind of right about this Edwin Diaz thing. Use him in the eighth inning, and I'll figure out the ninth inning later. That's the right thinking. And that's why, I swear to you, that answer made me so happy. Not because, I mean, jokes aside, like because I've suggested it. No. It's because I agree with it. It's because if he had just said, I needed the win, I wanted a six out save, I don't think he's thinking about this the right way. Now, luckily, he gave the explanation which he just gave, which is, I just wanted those three outs in the eighth inning. They have 9-1-2 coming up. He's going to face Randy Arozarena and Cal Raleigh. He's going to face them. I'd like my best pitcher to do that. And then we'll see. We'll see what things look like. And the way things looked is that Diaz was pitch efficient. He didn't throw a lot of pitches. And so I thought it set up with a 3-run lead. And at that point, it was 4, 5, and 6 coming up for him to keep Diaz in. And Diaz gives up the home run to Suarez. Okay, no big deal. It's a 3-0 game. And they win 3-1. So I really loved not only the move, but the way he thought about it. I thought that was the right thinking, and I hope that thinking continues. Because right now, until proven otherwise, Edwin Diaz is far and away the most trustworthy guy in this bullpen. I would love for that to change with Ryan Helsley. I like Tyler Rogers. He's just not on that level, as solid as he is. Gregory Soto's been great. I put him in the circle of trust. He ain't on that level either. Reed Garrett's been shaky recently. He's not on that level. It's Diaz. And so you have to treat him like he is what he is, which is the best reliever on this team. And you got to put him in the toughest spots and the most important spots. And he's got to face your opponent's best hitters, which is exactly what we saw. So Saturday was a great win. It was great to just get a win. But what does it mean if they don't win Sunday? What does it mean if they don't win Sunday? And so you get this Little League game, which is very cool. Cool atmosphere, little ballpark. And by cool atmosphere, I guess it benefits the Mets in that you aren't going to hear the boos. You aren't going to hear Met fan groans. You're just going to hear kids who are so excited to see these superstars play baseball. And a couple of things about this game. Number one, Clay Holmes deserves a lot of credit. He started this game as badly as he could. He hit Randy Arozarena with the first pitch, and then he fell behind Cal Raleigh. Like, it looked inevitable. Like, Seattle was going to start this game with 2-1 and nobody out. And who knows what was going to happen. But he struck out Cal Raleigh. He got the double play against Julio Rodriguez. And I thought, for the most part, Clay Holmes was really good. Really good. His issue was the fourth inning. Now, let's go through the fourth inning and really try to examine how big of an issue it was. He gets ahead of Julio Rodriguez, gives up a double. I mean, just a great piece of hitting by J-Rod. Rips one up to right center field for a double. He strikes out Josh Naylor looking. He gets Suarez to ground out. He is a pitch away when he's ahead of Polanco 1-2 in getting through the fourth inning without giving up a run after giving up a leadoff double to Julio Rodriguez. And let's see what happens. Gets ahead of him 1-2 and gets a soft line drive that is right at Lindor. And it's right at him enough where, yes, he's leaving his feet, but he's got to make the play. Am I going to go nuts and call it an error? I think it's a borderline error. It looked like it went right through his glove. And so you get the double deucers of horribleness on this misplay by Lindor. Not only does Seattle get on the board because the Mets had built a 3-0 lead and now it's 3-1, but now you ask Clay Holmes to get a fourth out of the inning and he wasn't making it easy. He gave up a base hit to the next batter. He walked J.P. Crawford in like in this endless at-bat. And the Mariners are now like set up to tie the game. And then Cole Young, the ninth place hitter, gets ahead of the count 3-0. Lindor was on the verge. And this is a guy who is clearly the heavy favorite to be the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series. We'll address in a little bit. But he was on the verge of blowing this game single-handedly. And maybe single-handedly isn't fair because if you're Clay Holmes, you can still get the fourth out. You could still get out of the inning. You could still bail your teammate out. But that was a very costly miscue by Francisco Lindor. And credit to Holmes, after he gives up the hit, after he walks the eighth place hitter, after he falls behind Cole Young, he does get him to luckily pop up the shortstop and really save his game. Because that had the makings of a Clay Holmes disaster. And what would we be saying right now? Would we just exonerate him because of the Lindor miscue? Or would we say, no, screw it, man, you got to overcome it? I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest with you. Like, Lindor's got to make that play clearly. And if you're Clay Holmes, find a way to get through the inning anyway. He then pitches a 1-2-3 fifth inning. And this was one of those rare moments. Rare, because I am very big on, I got five out of Clay, call it a day, get him out of the game. But because the Mets broke it open in the bottom of the fifth inning when Vientos hit the three-run home run, so it's 7-1 after five. Holmes' pitch count is 88, but again, not crazy about the pitch counts. He just threw a 1-2-3 inning against the top of the order, third time around the order, throws a 1-2-3 inning in the top of the fifth inning. I was kind of cool with him starting the sixth. I got to be honest with you. If the Mets didn't break it open and it was 3-1, probably not, then I would have probably been like, you know what, I'm fine, quick hook, let's go. They do have an off day on Monday, and maybe that factors into this, but I would have looked at it as, you know what, Clay? I'm going to reward you, and I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to challenge you. Let's see if you can get through the sixth inning. Let's see if you can get this pitch count upwards towards 100. It's at 88 right now. He is coming off of regular rest. I guess that's a factor, too. But I'm just being honest. This was one of those rare times where I would have been good with challenging Clay Holmes to pitch the sixth inning. Instead, you now need 12 outs from your bullpen, and it was not easy, but they did get it. Brooks Raley, with a bounce-back performance, got the first two outs, got into trouble, but got through it. Reed Garrett gives up the two-run home run to Cal Raley, but gets three outs. And then we got Ryan Helsley. And look, you know you don't have Diaz available. There's a good chance that Gregory Soto is not available. So you look at your bullpen and you see, who? Where were you going? And that's a part of why I wanted Clay Holmes to get pushed, because I thought that there was the perfect middle ground of clean fifth inning, big lead, pitch count, whatever. I don't have my full complements in my bullpen, and I'm not sure how much I trust Ryan Helsley. In fact, I don't trust Ryan Helsley. So am I using him? And if I'm using him, where am I using him? So Mendy squeezes out the eighth inning with a 7-3 lead. That is not exactly a low leverage, we got this kind of spot. The way he's pitched recently. So I guess it's better, it's better than going home in a one-run game or a two-run game. But he goes to him in a 7-3 game. Did anybody have confidence that we were going to see a good Ryan Helsley? Well, credit to him. Back-to-back strikeouts, issues the walk, gets the ground out on the long at-bat against J.P. Crawford. I thought he was squeezed on a few pitches, or at least a few pitches were borderline that didn't go his way. A very nice bounce-back performance by Helsley. Do I trust him? No. Do I put him back into a one-run game in the eighth inning if I have other options? Not really. Problem is we got to figure out who are the other options. I guess the way I would rank bullpen trust after Diaz would be Gregory Soto, Tyler Rogers, I think, would be the two guys you look at and say, okay, reasonable amounts of trust. And then you're looking at Reed Garrett, who's fallen off recently, a couple of bad performances in a row. This one good performance by Helsley doesn't bring him all the way back. Stanek, forget about. I mean, nobody trusts him. Frankie Montas is just eating up, you know, innings when you got to go to your bullpen early. But at least for now, deep breath. Hell of a performance by Ryan Helsley. As far as the offense is concerned, Lindor continues to hit with the three hits. We saw Francisco Alvarez put together another awesome offensive performance. I just wish Alvarez didn't hit that double in the seventh inning, because he runs to second. He's got to go full speed. He goes headlong dive, and you could tell he jams up his thumb, and this could be bad. And it could be bad for a few reasons. A, for him, because the guy's been a different player since they've recalled him. So it would just suck for him to miss time, considering he is playing some of the best baseball right now. And obviously for this lineup, I mean, it's a major blow to this lineup. He's been a really good addition since they brought him back. Mendy said after the game he's going for an MRI back in New York, so fingers crossed. But I got to tell you right now, I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about it because of, A, his track record. He's had this injury before. And two, just the way it looked. Like, even when he stayed in the game, like, there's nothing worse than, oh, he stayed in the game, everything's great. No, it means nothing. The next half inning, the guy's going to come out. He's another candidate for the Rico I'm the Man Now Star of the Series. I mean, he has been hitting. I certainly love the three-run home run he hit Friday that got them back in the game, even though the rally was going to go nowhere against Munoz. But three more hits for Alvarez. He is smoking the ball the other way, which is a great sign. But it feels like he's going to miss time. And that sucks. Sucks for us. Sucks for him. That's for damn sure.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Sure, but good performance by the offense. Vientos, very encouraging. The sac fly early was important. Then, of course, the three-run home run. And we see this Met offense continue to hit. Continue to hit. By the way, this was a weekend to celebrate because the Mets finally won a series. I mean, when the hell was the last time we could do that? And you know you can celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, easy to enjoy, whether you're at Citi Field, your favorite spot, or maybe you're on vacation like I am. Ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. It's a new tradition, served chilled, imported from Japan, official sake of Rico Bronya. Let's have a sip for this Met victory, because we needed it. A series victory for the first time in God knows how long. Damn right. Let me get to the Rico net negative. I think the net negative is very easy. Hoff, by the way, is on vacation too. We're doing two dueling Rico Bronya podcast, but we're on vacation. I'm by the beach in North Carolina. He's doing Disney World. We got it all covered. So if you want to jump in, Hoff, you let me know. But to me, the net negative still is Ryan Helsley. Like, it's tough to give it to anybody else. There's really not anybody offensively that went completely silent. The starting pitching was decent over these three games. Even Manaea on Friday, they gave him a lead. He held on to it. At least for a couple of innings. He pitched five innings. He settled down after a rocky start, so it's not him. It's not McLean or Holmes, who pitched great. They're the opposite. So to me, it's Ryan Helsley. Like, what happened on Friday was such a freaking disaster. And so while it was nice for him to bounce back on Sunday and pitch a clean inning, and that's great, but I'm sorry, bro. I apologize. And we always say this, when you win a series, sometimes, you know, it's tougher to grade you because they won. But in this case, tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think there's anyone that could take this away from Helsley for what he did to us on Friday night.
No, he made my life
easy Friday because I had a great show, 3 hours of just crushing Ryan and Nelson. It was like, you know, those shows, you dream about those shows. So thank you for that. But yeah, there's nobody else. I mean, that was just, it was a dumpster fire. And you're right, dude. I don't really know. You keep on saying circle of trust. There really is no circle. I don't really feel there is. I know Soto's been pitching better as of late, and Rodgers is Rodgers. Like, he just seems like he's got a rubber arm. He's going to be out there almost every day. But I just don't know. Like, it feels like they needed to get one more arm on top of those three arms to get us to Diaz. Because these pitchers, they go five innings for the most part this weekend, but it's really like four innings. That's what we're getting. And you need like an additional arm on top of them.
Well, I think if Helsley was pitching the way we expected after that trade, they are very deep. I mean, they have a deep bullpen. The problem is when one of the primary guys that we were relying on has been this bad, it kind of blows the whole thing up. Like, I still think the bullpen will be a strength of this team. I think it should be a strength of this team. But they got to figure out the Helsley situation. I mean, he can't be like who they end up burying, like Ryan Stanek. You can only have one Ryan Stanek in your bullpen. If you have too many Ryan Staneks, then all of a sudden you don't have anybody to trust.
Yeah, no, trust me. We went through the Ryan Staneks. We went through the Austin Warrens. We went through, I mean, how many guys at the DFA, the Oscar Brazaban? Like, you go through everybody.
By the way, you mentioned Oscar Brazaban. Beningo was mentioning it on his Saturday show. Like, what happened to Brazaban? Where the hell is Brazaban?
Brazaban.
Well, yeah, he calls him a different name. But I was checking on his minor league numbers, and he has an 8 ERA in AAA. Now, I will make you feel better. There was one performance in which he gave up like 7 runs. So his numbers are actually not as bad as it seems. But yeah, I guess he could be a candidate to come back soon. But right now they're going to have a numbers game. They're going to have a numbers crunch because they're going to add a 6th starter. Like, that's going to happen once they go on this stretch beginning on Tuesday where they play every single day. Tyler McGill is a prime candidate for that. He pitched very well in the minor leagues on rehab. Obviously, we've talked a lot about Brandon Sproat is a candidate. There's nobody with options. You know, the only guy with options that you would want to send down is Reed Garrett. And I guess you could. I mean, you could send Reed Garrett down for 10 days, but he's one of the guys that you probably trust more than others in this bullpen.
But by the way, I love the idea of a 6-man rotation, but the fact is the guys you're bringing, Tyler McGill is going to be, I mean, we might as well bring back Paul Blackburn. What are we doing here? Like, bring Jonah Tong up. Bring freaking Brandon Sproat.
They could. The thing we should remember, though, about McGill, I know it's not sexy, is that he was actually pitching well. Like, he was not a disaster this season. And he's pitched well. I think he struck out 9 guys in like 3 1/3 innings in his last rehab start. So he's not as bad of a candidate as we make him out to be. But they're going to need a 6th starter. There's no way they're going to go through this stretch of games where they play 16 straight days without adding one. Anyhow, let's pick our I'm the Man Now star of the series. There's actually a lot of candidates. Francisco Alvarez, we'll start with him. He was 2-for-4 with a home run in game 1. He was 1-for-4 on Saturday. And in the Little League finale, he went 3-for-4 with another RBI. So you do the math. That is 6 hits in 12 at-bats. That's not too bad. So I think Francisco Alvarez is a great candidate. Obviously, the guy who's the leader in the clubhouse is Francisco Lindor. He was 3-for-5 with 2 home runs in game 1, including nailing my pick of an anytime home run. 2-for-4 in game 2. And then he caps it off with 3 more hits, 3-for-5 in the finale of this series. So he ended up having 8 hits in 14 at-bats, 9-for-14. Damn. I mean, that's pretty good with 6 RBIs. I know he made the miscue that drove me nuts, but a huge, huge weekend for Lindor. I think the other candidate's Nolan McClain. And, you know, we've gone over this with this award all year that it's tough to give it to a starting pitcher that impacts 1 games. But I'll tell you, where this team was and with what he did, 5 1/3 scoreless innings, was monstrous. It was huge. So I think it's either Alvarez is an honorable mention, great series, great series. It is either Francisco Lindor or Nolan McClain. I'd lean towards Lindor. But I don't think it's crazy to say Nolan McLean is the Rico, I'm the man now star of the series for what he did on Saturday.
All right. So I'm going to two things. I'm going to take a shot at Lindor. And I don't know the facts. So I was on a plane waiting for an hour. We had landed in Florida, sitting at Orlando. I'm watching a game. We're sitting there for an hour, not moving because the runway was shut down. I don't know why. But I saw that Lindor got picked off at first base. Was that a caught steal?
I'm so glad you asked this question because this is so right up my alley. And I forgot to get to it. So he led off the game with a base hit. The ruling is with caught stealing versus pickoff is if you were going or not. So in my opinion, if I am the official scorer, and I'll tell you what they score, but I'll tell you my opinion, I think it should be a caught stealing because he took off. So even though it's 1-3 and like sometimes you'll phrase it as he got picked off, he was running. He was stealing second base. And that was his first move, was to run towards second base. Then on the pickoff move, he stopped and he gets picked off. Now, when the play was officially occurring, I checked the MLB game day and they had called it a pickoff, which I disagree with, by the way. And not the end of the world. Like it is, it's truly an official scorer's decision, but I think it is a caught stealing, or at least it should be. Obviously, the Mets have this long streak. I think it's 38 in a row without being caught stealing. They're two off the major league record. And as of right now, I went to the MLB game day. And I have some unfortunate news.
Caught stealing.
I'm right. It is a caught stealing. They have changed it to a caught stealing Kirby to Raley. And, well, that doesn't make sense. Kirby to Raley. Whatever.
No, Naylor. Should be Naylor. Kirby to Naylor.
It should be Naylor. It's labeled the wrong way. Either way, I see it now as a caught stealing. And it should be. Like, you saw the play on the plane. Like, he's trying to steal the base. And he got – and that's usually the way it goes. Like, it's a scorer's decision on what the intent was. And he was trying to steal. So, it should be a caught stealing. It should officially end the streak. I think we'll get a better explanation from Gary Cohen on Tuesday because you know he'll want to talk about this when the Mets play the Nationals because this was a streak he was certainly obsessed with. But as of right now, it does look like it is going down as a caught stealing, which will end the Mets' streak.
So because of that, I think we can't give it to Lindor.
Oh, come on.
You got to give it to McLean. Plus the missed double play that he made. I mean, dude, that double play was so huge by McLean. No other pitcher right now would do that for the Mets. No other starting pitcher. I don't care if it's Manaea, if it's Senga. It doesn't make a difference. Right. No one can make that play because they're all frozen. That kid, he's got it, man. He's got the sack.
We did this on the last Rico, and I thought it worked out very well. We were debating who the net negative was, and we were debating between David Peterson, who blew the 6-0 lead against Atlanta, and Ryan Helsley. And I said, you know what? We're mixed. I'm Team Peterson. You're Team Helsley. Let's go to the YouTube chat. We'll give people who are consuming the Rico Bronya live the chance to make the decision. So we'll do it again, all right? And this is a big one because this is the Rico, I'm the Man Now star of the series.
Big deal.
If you are consuming the Rico Bronya live on YouTube and you didn't download it and you're listening 2 days later, in which we'd love to hear your opinion, but it's over. Like, we've already decided it. Is it Lindor or is it McLean as the Rico, I'm the Man Now star of the series? And Hoff, you're usually very fair. What are the people's reactions?
Well, I hate this because I feel like everybody always goes with you. But everyone, all but one person has said McLean. Everyone has gone with McLean.
Really? Yeah, you know what? I'm actually fact-checking off. I went up to the YouTube page to look. I'm such a jerk.
Someone said Butch Husky.
I saw Bernard Gilkey. Right, you win. Or you guys win. Look, I totally get it. I think it was split between the two of them. Look, Lindor had a great weekend. There's nothing to take away from this. The miscue was a negative, no question. The caught stealing was a negative. So he had those two negatives. But I think the impact that McLean had could be the impact that, you know, God willing, we're looking back on as a thing to turn the season around. I mean, that's really what we're hoping here. Like, I think back to London. And sometimes those turnarounds come in places where you least expect. But remember that game they won in London against the Phillies when Luis Torrens, of all people, made that great play? The double play, the 2-2-3 double play, as they say. And the season turned. So my fingers are crossed because this has been a rough, rough stretch. I mean, they've been a bad team for 2 months. So I don't think it's unfair to blame any of us for thinking that there will be no turnaround. But hopefully, if they can build off of this, two-game winning streak's nice. They got a lot of work to do. They got a hell of a lot more games to play, though they are about to play some lousy teams in the Washington Nationals and the Atlanta Braves before the big series against the Phillies. But maybe McClain's performance on Saturday will do it. So congratulations, Nolan McClain. You are the man now.
Is he the first rookie to get it this year?
That's a great question, Hoff. Thank you so much for asking.
We have to do double check everything, bro. That's what we do here.
All right, here we go. I'm going to read every Rico, I'm the man now star of the series. I'm going to do it very, very quickly because the Mets have played about 40 series now this season. Diaz, Alonso, Kranick. Kranick's not a rookie, but Kranick. Can't believe Kranick won one. Alonso. No, it was the series they swept the Blue Jays. He was great.
Oh.
Yeah, it wasn't even like a negative one. Like it was the opening weekend at Citi Field. They swept them. But Kranick was the man now. Diaz, Alonso, Kranick, Alonso, Senga, Alonso, Lindor, Alvarez, Taylor, Alonso, Soto, Beatty, Nimmo, Brazoban, Beatty, Peterson, Jose Castillo, Lindor, Peterson, Marte, Taylor, Soto, Waddell. Oh, Brandon Waddell. I think he's a rookie. Is he? He may not be, actually. Nimmo, McNeil, Nimmo, Vientos, Peterson, Alvarez, Mauricio, Vientos, Lindor, Garrett, Rogers, Alonso, and now Nolan McClain.
Wow.
So, congratulations to Nolan McClain. So I know that I made a few people money a few days ago because in our pick segment brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, Make Every Moment Matter, my big pick was Lindor hitting a home run because, as I explained, you could tell he was getting hot and he had good career numbers against Luis Castillo. So it all made sense. My pick here is that Juan Soto, who is running up a storm these days, and is always a lock to get on base, even when he isn't hitting. Juan Soto will steal a base Tuesday night in his former stomping grounds of Nationals Park. Now, usually, because those odds have not come out yet, usually those odds are about plus 550, plus 600. So you get pretty good odds on it. And Juan Soto, who has now stolen 20 bases, stole his 20th base of the season in the Little League game. So a 2020 season for Juan has a real shot at 30-30. Like, the pace he's stealing bases, like, why the hell not? I am going to go with a stolen base from Juan Soto on Tuesday night against the Washington Nationals. Once again, that was my pick, and it's brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. All right, one thing I really want to address, very, very important, is why Nolan McClain wasn't called up sooner.
Mm.
So we've heard about service time and rookie status. Those are the things that have gone around as, yeah, the Mets, that's what David Stearns did, man. He won't admit it, but he manipulated things to not call up Nolan McClain. Here's what I think is really important to understand. What's at stake in terms of calling him up and not calling him up? This is not about service time. I want to make this clear. This is not about service time. This is not about an extra year of free agency or an extra year of control before free agency. That is not the case. Okay, that is something we are used to in baseball. It's something that went on for a long time. It's something that teams would do forever, where they would manipulate service time by not calling a guy up to, let's say, the middle of May, and then they control him for one more year. The Mets famously didn't do that with Pete Alonso back in 2019. That is not what this is about. This is all about the prospect promotion incentive. So a couple of years ago, I think it was in the new CBA. It was in the new CBA. They made this deal to incentivize teams, not to manipulate them, but to incentivize a top prospect winning a rookie of the year or being an MVP finalist. So if you wait until the middle of May to call up your top prospect, the odds of them winning the rookie of the year are very low. So what Major League Baseball said was, we want to incentivize guys winning these awards, and if they do, the organization gets an extra pick. So I want to read this to you, and then we could figure out all together what the Mets did and if we truly have a problem with it. Saturday, the day Nolan McLean started, was the day in which his service time for this year would be 44 days. If you have the service time of 45 days, you will not qualify as a rookie. Because he will be in the major leagues for 44 days, he will qualify as a rookie, which means if Nolan McLean, who is currently a top 100 prospect, that's part of the rules here, finishes first in the rookie of the year voting or in the top three of MVP voting or Cy Young voting, the New York Mets will acquire an extra first round pick. It would be a compensatory pick at the back end of the first round. It has nothing to do with service time. It has nothing to do with team control. It has nothing to do with money. This has to do with if he's a rookie next year with great success, the Mets get an extra pick. Before I give you my verdict on this, the New York Mets, because of their payroll and because of their aggressiveness in free agency, they could kind of use extra first-round picks. Like, I'd argue that this kind of incentive actually may benefit big market teams more than benefit small market teams, because the big market team is losing their first round pick a lot when they sign big time free agents. So if this is what David Stearns was doing, and we don't know if that's the case, but I think a lot of us are making that assumption based on how well McLean was pitching, that yeah, they waited until this day. It is not about money. It's about draft picks. And I guess what I would equate it to for Hoff, because I kind of have a feeling you're going to hate this and say, who cares about the draft picks? We're in a fantasy baseball league. You want an extra draft pick. You want your draft picks to be good. And I think that that's what this is about. Now, you can still hate it and say, hey, you got to put the team first. You need this guy in the major leagues. Like, that's all fair game. But let us at least understand what was being done here. This is not Steve Cohen being cheap. This is not about the Mets trying to save an extra year of service time. This is about the Mets trying to make sure they're in play to get an extra pick in a future draft. Your thoughts?
Okay. But my issue with that is it's a crock of pushing them back and making sure we could do it for next year. Because if you look at the leaders in the NL Rookie of the Years, a lot of them were called up later in the season. Nick Kurtz, when did he get called up?
No, hold on. You're missing my point here, bro. If he got called up earlier, he wouldn't be a rookie next season. You're saying this year? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, no, I'm saying Rookie of the Year this year.
When did you want him called up?
I mean, I probably want him called up probably by June.
Were we saying that in June? I'm trying to be fair. When did we start bitching about McLean? Like, to me, it was in the last, month.
But here's the thing. It wasn't bitching about McLean. It was bitching about pitching depth. We didn't have it. Because when did Cannon go down? He went down in around June, right?
He went down in June, yeah.
You're looking for
late June.
We're looking at Paul Blackburn, and we're all scratching our head. Like, what are we doing here? We don't need that. Frankie Montas wasn't back yet. Manaea wasn't back yet. We were dying for help. And I remember them just calling. Again, we got Brandon Waddells. We got those are the type of guys we got. They weren't making any trades for anybody. So why not make the move then?
The problem is in the case of McLean, like, I'm looking at this. He got moved to AAA in May. He really started – I mean, he's been pitching well at AAA basically the entire time. But I think the real period of time where he was dominating was early July. So I don't think, the Rookie of the Year thing this year was never going to happen. Like, they were never calling him up that early. And look, if they needed him in June or July desperately, I'd agree with you. But to me, this was really the last 3 weeks. Like, I know on the Rico, it was a week and a half ago when I said, all right, this is the way I would line things up. I think at that point, once you're getting close to that 45-day period, what do you do? Do you just ignore it and say, screw it, we need two extra starts? Or do you say, hey, this could actually land us something really big for the organization. Let's just wait to ensure that he's a rookie.
No, I get that. Like, if that's the case, if it was really just over the last 2 weeks and you want to push it off, that's fine. But when did Blaise Tidwell get called up? Was he July 1st?
Yeah, but McLean wasn't on that level. Remember, he didn't get promoted to AAA till middle of May.
Yeah, again, listen, if someone's got the stuff, I don't care anymore. Like, a lot of times people don't even go to AAA.
But you want to make sure a guy is ready. Like, there's that balance between making sure. And look, Nolan McLean looks ready. And he went down to AAA. And I remember David Stearns talking about this in spring training in terms of when guys are ready. You want guys to struggle, and then you want them to overcome it. So he had, I'm looking at his numbers at AAA, man. Like, he had basically one bad start. Like, he was unbelievable. So he didn't struggle at all. Like, his second start at AAA, he walked six guys in five innings. That's a struggle. Five innings, four runs, six walks. No doubt about it. And then his next, like, eight starts were all great. But I don't think, like, middle of May he was ready necessarily. I know we were ready maybe for a prize prospect to come up, but you got to make sure guys are ready. And also the rotation wasn't a big need in May. Like, I'm trying to remember, and you said it with Griffin Cannon going down. You're talking like early July when we were all like, holy crap, they need an arm. And then they were getting Manaea back and they were getting Senga back, which seemed like it was stabilizing things. So at that point, was he ready? And number two, are you close enough to that period of time where you say, hey, let's hold it off? I think if it's July 1st, I call him up. I think when you're a week away, it probably does make sense to wait the extra week to give yourself this opportunity. But I think if it was the middle of June and it was obvious he was ready, then I wouldn't mess around for the possibility of a draft pick.
I just remember, and you're right, probably July, mid-July was when we were really talking more, because it was the All-Star break. We're like, okay, we survived that. We're going to get Manaea back. Because Manaea came back on the Sunday, right before All-Star break?
Yes, out of the bullpen.
Right. So we were able to escape that part. So it was like mid-July. We were like, okay, we're pitching rotation is going to get better. But I do remember earlier this season, we discussed how great the pitching staff was, how amazing they were. But it was like under false pretenses, where it's like they're not really going deep into games. They are pitching great, but like how, and the bullpen's pitching great too. But how long is that going to last when they're used every day? So we were kind of thinking it was going to end up happening. Maybe we were talking about it more than it actually was at that point in time.
Yeah, I think what's going to be interesting next is, you know, obviously you'd love to see Jonah Tong. Everybody would. That's not going to happen. They just promoted him to AAA. I doubt they're going to quickly call him up. Brandon Sproat's kind of had his issues at times at AAA. So do they go to Tyler McGill? But either way, they're going to need to add a sixth guy. Here's what this schedule looks like starting on Tuesday. Obviously, they have an off day Monday. They got through this stretch against Atlanta and Seattle. They finished strong. 3-3 is disappointing, but at least they finished strong. Here's what they have coming up. And it's not a daunting schedule. It's that they're playing every day. And we know Kodai Senga is not going to pitch on regular rest. They're cool with doing Clay Holmes on regular rest. He just did it. Same with David Peterson. But you know with Kodai Senga, they're going to manipulate things. Here's what they have coming up. Three games in Washington where it'll be David Peterson, Kodai Senga, and Sean Manaea. Three games in Atlanta with Nolan McLean scheduled to open up that series. Boy, another test for the kid. I know the Braves aren't great, but man, house of horrors for us. Let's see what he can do. So three in Washington, three in Atlanta, then the showdown with the Phillies. And right now the Mets are five games behind Philadelphia. They're not buried by any stretch. I would love to get to that series by picking up just one more game. Not a high bar. They have a week of baseball. Pick up a game. Go into the Philly series within four so that if you can win two out of three, you get within three. And you slowly start to chip away at this thing. I mean, ideally, I'd love to go into that series three games out, but beggars can't be choosers. Three against the Phillies at home, four against the Marlins at home, and then three games in Detroit through Labor Day before they finally get an off day. And then they have another stretch where they play every single day, where they're going to play 10 straight days. So 16 straight days, off day, 10 straight days, and then they get a bunch of off days to where they play six off day, six, season's over, and hopefully we're in the playoffs, and I have the playoff schedule, but I don't want to touch it because we got some work to do. Only leading Cincinnati by a small amount, but this is going to be a challenge. Now, where do they have to insert the sixth guy, and where should it be? Here's the way I have it drawn up. Peterson, Senga, Manaea in Washington, if they kept everybody on their day, well, with an extra day, it would be McLean Friday, Holmes Saturday, and then David Peterson on regular rest Sunday against Atlanta. That is not what I would do. Here's what I would do. I would Peterson Tuesday against the Nationals, Senga Wednesday, Manaea Thursday, McLean Friday against Atlanta, home Saturday against Atlanta, Sunday against Atlanta would be the insertion. That would be the day I put a sixth starter in there, whether it's Tyler McGill, whether you think Brandon Sproat is ready, not Frankie Montas, even though he's on the roster, but that's what I would do. And the reason I would do that is it pushes Peterson back to open up the series against the Phillies at Citi Field. And if you do that, here's your rotation for the three games against Philly. Peterson, Senga, Manaea. And despite David Peterson's recent bad performance, do we not all agree that besides Nolan McLean, who is still an unknown, those are their three best pitchers? And you'd have them lined up to face the Phillies. So, Mendy, I know you're listening right now. Not live, but you downloaded it, and you're on a little bit of a bus ride. You're enjoying your off day. Follow my lead on this one, bro. This makes complete sense. Push Peterson back to give him an extra day. Insert your extra starter on Sunday against Atlanta. I mean, you could do it Saturday against Atlanta and give Holmes another day. I mean, whatever. That part doesn't matter. But line it up. It's right there in front of you to have Peterson, Senga, Manaea for those three games against the Philadelphia Phillies at Citi Field. Thank you very much for listening. Our Drunk Rico is scheduled for Tuesday. If you've never listened to it, it's a yearly tradition when I'm on vacation. In this case, Pete is on vacation, where we get really drunk and we do a Drunk Rico. I do want to confirm on your part, Tuesday night, you are good to have a few and have a Drunk Rico, Pete?
Yes. Now, what time? I don't know just yet. May have to be a little bit later because my family is, for whatever reason, obsessed with Disney and they want to be out late in the parks.
I completely agree. And I think the best way to really have a Drunk Rico is to make it a late night Rico. So the Mets play the Nationals at 6:45, which means that game's going to be over by 9:30. I think we need to give that time. Yes. So for anyone who is looking to consume the Drunk Rico live and maybe safely do it with us, call me crazy. I think we should set up about 11:30 midnight. Is that a fair time to?
I think a midnight is a great spot. If we could do 11:30, that's good. That's good too, though. I'll confirm it with you, and we'll tweet it out before we actually do it.
We will keep you posted. Obviously, if you download it the next day, no harm, no foul. You don't have to worry. But if you would like to take part in the Drunk Rico, again responsibly,
yes,
we are looking at Tuesday night, some point 11:30, 12 midnight. And we'll have some fun, and hopefully it'll be after a victory.
And now let me ask you a question. We joke about this bingo card all the time. Are we going to whip out a real bingo card?
It's a great idea. So we have a loyal listener who created a Rico Bronya bingo card, and we will. In fact, maybe I'll tweet out the bingo card, and we could all play along together. A Drunk Rico featuring bingo. This sounds like a hell of a night.
Oh, boy. My family's going to be – this is called vacation, baby. This is what I want to do on vacation. I don't want to go chill with Mickey.
I gotcha. Well, a fun Rico, a happy Rico. We appreciate everybody listening and downloading episode 532 of Rico Bronya. Tuesday night for the Drunk Rico. Thursday, we'll do a series recap of the series coming up with the Washington Nationals. LGM, let's go Mets. Thank you very much for listening to another edition of Rico Bronya.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.